Thank you for listening to this talk, produced by the Art Gallery of South Australia.
Good morning, everyone. Well, welcome to the Art Gallery of South Australia. My name's Lee Robb. I'm the curator of contemporary art here, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome the artists and Liz now, and also to acknowledge and to be grateful that we're meeting here on Kaurna country and to pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging, and to pay our great respects to their enduring connection to country. Adelaide, Tantania, is also the home of the red kangaroo and also a place of a meeting place and a place of celebration, so it feels very appropriate that we're gathering here today. Great, you're in for quite a treat. You've got a trifecta of painters, and we're so thrilled that Liz Nell, who is now the Executive Director of Art Projects Australia, is back in Adelaide. You'll know her from being a director at ACE and CAXA, and she has a formidable CV of extraordinary shows and working with artists on brilliant projects. So she's joined today by Marikit Santiago, by Clara Adolfs, and by Seth Birchall. So you're in for a treat. So I'll hand you over to Liz and to the artists and say thank you in advance and congratulations on your extraordinary works. They're truly, you know, triumphant in each of their installations. So congrats.
Thank you, Lee. Thank you so much. It's so wonderful to be here on Kaurna country where I grew up, and I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of this land, the Kaurna people, and acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded. And I'd just like to also acknowledge everyone, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people here joining us in the audience today and the artists in the exhibition. As Lee said, my name's Liz. I'm the Executive Director of Arts Project Australia and a dear friend and collaborator of Jose De Silva, curator of the 2024 Adelaide Biennial. And that's what we're here to talk about today, Inner Sanctum, this incredible exhibition. And I only saw it for the first time yesterday, and I don't know how everyone else feels about it, but I definitely feel like this was the exhibition that I needed right now. And I'd just really like to take this opportunity to thank Jose, as well as all 24 exhibiting artists and poets, for creating a space that is gentle, contemplative, and I think really connected to the most sacred parts of us. You know, the world, I feel like at the moment particularly, the world is just constantly shouting, and I certainly feel that in my day-to-day life. And exhibitions like this really invite us to pause and reflect on our shared humanity, to connect with those quieter parts of ourselves, and to find refuge in our imagination, in spiritual life and philosophical inquiry. And I think, as all the artists in the exhibition and on stage have so powerfully conveyed, it's in this space, this quiet solitude, where we can transform both individually and collectively. I won't reintroduce everyone because Lee's already introduced the group, but before we get into a conversation, I'd just like to invite each of the artists here with me on stage to introduce their practice and to speak a little bit about their work that they have contributed to this year's biennial. We might start with with Marikit. Marikit, if you wouldn't mind beginning.
Sure. I am a painter and I work in Western Sydney. Well, my work often includes my children. So you'll see that the two paintings that I've put forward for this year's biennial both feature my family. Both paintings consider the creation stories. One considers the biblical creation story of Adam and Eve, and subverts all of those gender roles in that biblical story. And the other is presents me and my family as the ancient gods and goddesses of the Philippines, which also have crossovers with the ancient Greek and Roman mythology as, you know, what I think are the very beginnings of Christianity. And that's something that's quite present in my experience as a Filipina, being raised by migrant parents. Yeah.
Maybe you would like also touch on the materiality of your paintings.
Oh, yes. Both my works and a lot of my work that I've been developing recently are painted on cardboard. These cardboard supports are found cardboard, so they are taken from elsewhere. I don't seek, you know, fresh cardboard. So there is a migration story imbued in the material itself. My choice of using cardboard is both symbolic and practical. So as well as that migration symbol, it also reflects on the long-standing tradition of the Balik Bayan box, whereby Filipino migrants all over the world will continue to provide aid for their family in the Philippines by sending a box full of groceries, or in my case, you know, all my old clothes and toys would go to my cousins in the Philippines. And this is a practice that I've witnessed my mum do for my whole childhood and still does. So that symbolism is within that cardboard, as well as that making do ethos of the Philippine people that I find quite inspiring and that I can connect with, because otherwise, you know, in my personal history, I haven't always felt at ease with my ethnic identity. But when I think about that innovative attitudes of the Filipino people, I can admire that. But practically, cardboard is free. It's light. I'm pretty short, so I need to be able to, you know, work. The supports that I work on need to be flexible for my limitations. I work within a very small studio space at home with three children, and you know, my artistic desires want me to paint big, and so, you know, that's a way that I've found that I can satisfy those needs, and all of those needs within how I work, the space that I work, the material that I work with.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm, great. Thank you.
Your turn.
Hey. That was great. Thank you. My name is Seth Burchell. I'm a painter. I paint out of Summerhill in Sydney. I make landscape paintings that are sort of an amalgamation of places that I've been to and sort of best case scenario scenes, I guess. Because I live in an urban environment, I'm sort of always chasing this notion of living in the bush, living in the country, living in the coast. So I feel like my work is a way for me to surround myself in an environment that I don't live in for mental health reasons. And that seems to be what my work is about, maintaining my own mental health. And that sounds quite flippant, but it's true. For this show, I've made a bunch of paintings, I guess based on memories of my upbringing and memories of family history, I guess, and a sort of a speculative memory, a place that I would like to go to, but that's the waterfall painting is... It's a place that's under threat environmentally, I guess, and I would like to get there one day. So, but at this stage, it's just a Getty image that I stole off the internet. I feel like that's been 25 minutes. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that my,
thank
yeah?
you. That was great.
That
was great. Yeah. Thank you. Clara, perhaps you'd like to speak about your works there downstairs. When you walk down the staircase into the bowels of the gallery,
yes.
And there's a suite of about 16.
There's 16 paintings.
I can't believe I just. I don't know how I remembered that, but yeah, 16.
Yes, perfect. So I mostly use old photographs as my references for my paintings, and I suppose my work is always just a continuation of previous exhibitions. Like, I'm kind of continually making work, and this is no exception, but. I was given this opportunity by Jose to make, you know, large works for that particular room downstairs. So I felt pretty lucky to be able to, you know, felt ambitious to, you know, make larger works and to be given just like one plane rather than having like a room that you have to walk around, but just one plane where you can see all of the images, all the paintings at once was interesting. So I work from south of Sydney. I have a studio down in the Southern Highlands. I also work from home. Yeah, this
great
solo life of a painter.
I think, thank you so much, all of you, for introducing your work. I think there's a lot of romance in all of your works and in lots of the works in the exhibition, and I mean that in a kind of the broader and most poetic sense of, you know, of the word. Clara, you just said that you kind of use found photographs as almost like studies for your paintings, and it seems like rather than being direct kind of facsimiles, you kind of project your own interpretation, I guess, onto them. And there's a quality in the work, I think, the composition, the light, the muted palette, the figures, which really to me evoke this kind of this mid-century era. And I know that the photos you source are kind of vintage and secondhand. And I was wondering, do you select photos from a particular era? And if so, I'm curious about what it is about that moment in time that you're so drawn to.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that there's kind of like from the 40s to say the 60s, that's this kind of period that I pick photos from. And I think it's just got to do with the technology of the photography that I'm drawn to. Like, it, you know, they're quite high contrast and there's not a lot of detail in these images that I select. They're quite small, and so when I blow them up onto a larger canvas, then they lose... I kind of have to fill in a lot of details myself. But I'm not concerned with likeness, and I work quite quickly, and so... And I like to work quickly because, you know, it kind of brings life to the work and you know, reinstates that life that was in the recorded moment in time. And, yeah, so does that answer?
Yeah, I guess when I look at your paintings and knowing that they're kind of photos, when I looked at them I wasn't sure if they were photos from that era or you've just kind of recreated that feeling, but there's this sense of nostalgia and sentimentality and kind of melancholy almost for the past, I feel like. And
yeah.
I guess, yeah.
I do avoid... you know, smiles and things like that. I like to have a bit of mystery. Like, you know, I don't know. Like, they're all anonymous figures to me. And you know, that I find these images like online. I buy them in bulk. Like, you know, deceased estates and people just give them away. They don't. I'm really surprised how people just don't hold on to these things. Yeah. So, but I think. Yeah, of course there's a nostalgia and I mean, I suppose I'm a bit of a sucker for nostalgia, perhaps. But I do like that mystery of a time that I didn't live in, and, yeah, I like that mystery of not knowing, yeah.
Yeah, and because it makes me kind of think about this... They kind of feel... When I look at them, I feel this kind of romantic longing for the past, but then... I wonder also when I'm also looking at paintings if it was a past that ever really existed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
And so I think thinking about memory and the perception of memory comes through really strong.
Yeah, and I do try to keep like a universal kind of quality to come through as well, you know. So, I mean, you can pick things with like hairstyles and fashion and things like that, but I don't try to get too tied down in those details. I like it to have a universal quality.
Yeah, and that was my other question. You use this very gestural and kind of loose brush strokes, and the figures are kind of imbued with this sense of anonymity, particularly around their facial features. And I wondered if that's an intentional visual device and what you're kind of hoping that the audience or the viewer might get out of looking at your paintings.
Yeah, I definitely try to keep it pretty vague and just let the audience have their own ideas of it. I mean, I don't know. I like to not know the story of the... I mean, sometimes there's something written on the back of a photograph. You get a little clue. I get them from all over the world, so there's all these different stories going on there but that I have no idea about. But, I mean, I like to have my own ideas about their story as I'm painting them, but I wouldn't necessarily put that into the work. I kind of let the audience, you know, decide for themselves, yeah, and make up their own minds, yeah.
Seth, in 2014 you undertook an 8-day hike in Tasmania. And I believe that was when what kind of inspired you to begin your, as you know, as you kind of, as we spoke about, as is mentioned in the catalogue and talking about your work, your time of day paintings, which depict these composite or imagined landscapes. I'm curious what it was particularly about that experience that kind of inspired you.
Yes, that's right. I did take a walk in 2014. I think it was just a combination of many things, possibly just seeing the sun set at the angles that it was setting at. It seemed like it took an hour and a half to set every night. It was on the south coast track, so you fly in to a landing strip and then walk out on the southern tip of Tassie there. It was magical, and I believe in magic, and I want to sort of communicate in that language, and so I think it was just there were sort of many things that coalesced to start making that kind of work. I also have three brothers who I'm very close to who live in the countrysides, and that they were sending me lots of images of their lives and their travels, and I just started collecting those images and working from them, and then sort of created a large body of work that I could sort of venture out from, and then sort of retrospectively added the sort of the walk as the catalyst. But it was many things at the same time, yeah.
And you mentioned before a Getty image, and you kind of, your work often draws on this amalgam of personal fields, notes, photos, maybe reports, social media posts. And I guess I was thinking about, When I think about that kind of diverse range of source material, there's so many different ways that nature is expressed and depicted in those, you know, formats. For example, how we might read a photo of, you know, even say Uluru on Instagram is very different to how your personal journal notes might reflect it. So I guess my question is, in your paintings, are you trying to capture all of those representations and relationships to nature and distill those into one image?
No. No, it's more just a sort of like a vibe. Mm. Just want to sort of get in the studio and play around with colour, line, and then see sort of what happens. It's very intuitive, very... Whatever the opposite of concrete is, it's the opposite of concrete. Fluid? I don't know. But yeah, no, it's. I sort of work in, I guess, in sequence and iteration. So, I sort of literally sometimes think today is a yellow painting day, and tomorrow will be an orange painting day. But yeah, that's how it works. And then I guess. Whatever it seems to needs whatever the image needs, I sort of add on as it's going, sort of thing. Yeah.
And there's a real meditative quality to them. You mentioned before about mental health, and that's something I can really understand, that meditative space that you might inhabit when you're in the studio. Is that, to you, is a process as important as the images themselves? And is, I guess, thinking about the idea of inner sanctum, is that where you know, through that process of creating these landscapes and conjuring nature, is that, you know, a part of a form of quiet contemplation to you?
Yeah, definitely, you? Definitely. Mm. That's sort of the need to be in those spaces is quite strong. And I somehow don't get in them very much. So, yeah, I don't know, I've snookered myself somehow with my commute to the studio is across the lovely Parramatta Road, and I just, it's sort of
beautiful serene landscape. Oh,
I have been trying to sort of deal with it, but it is every day it irks me. So it's, yeah, I guess the studio has to be, for lack of a better word, a safe space for me. Yeah,
it's interesting because both of your practices are very distinct from one another in the sense that, Seth, you know, your work kind of fits within this broad tradition of landscape, and Clara, yours within portraiture. But there is a very deep shared quality that I think connects them both. And, you know, there was a wonderful review of Inner Sanctum in The Guardian this morning written by a friend of mine, Jane Howard, actually talking about the exhibition being about light. And both of your works, I think, really evoke, have this kind of atmospheric mood which evokes this kind of, you know, contemplative space. And I don't think it's as simple to say it's about nature, because, Clara, your work is, you know, focuses more on, your paintings focus more on people than the natural world. So when we talk about atmosphere and mood, it's an energy, it's a it's not the sky, I don't even know how to describe it, but I have spent the last few days thinking about all of your works and the idea of mood and atmosphere, and I'm not exactly sure what my question is, but I wanted to ask you both about light, about atmosphere, and what it is about the time of day or atmosphere in the air or sunset and sunrise that inspires us to reflect and to contemplate and to go deep. Because I think we've all felt that very profoundly. You know, when you wake up first thing in the morning, I don't do very often, but there's this sense of peace. And what do you think it is about the atmosphere or light that evokes that?
I think I know my answer. This is going to sound so negative, but I think it's because we're not failing. We have sort of an opportunity in the morning. Anyway, there's the clean slate ahead of you, and anything's possible. Blah blah blah. But you haven't fucked it up yet. Sorry, you haven't stuffed it up yet. Which I guess sort of as the evening as a counterbalance, I guess you can, you know, yeah, you are taking stock, and I think you're probably more generous on what you did achieve that day. I think as an artist, you're always up against failure in the studio. I mean, yeah, it's such a cliche, but you're like every day is. It's pretty rare that you have a day that you've done everything top-notch, you know? Every day, there's an email I haven't answered, an email I haven't written, you know, a painting I stuffed up or a painting I didn't do. So I think that's where that space possibly... If that makes any sense at all, that's why that space sort of holds significance for me anyway. Yeah. And also having a small child, I think I got to sort of introduce myself to that. I wasn't an early riser until she came along. It is a stunning time of day, and you heard it here first, folks.
Yeah, I mean, light is a very important device in my work. I mean, all of the photographs that I use practically are taken outdoors, and so they're all in natural light. And, you know, and I like to paint light because it makes me feel good, and it... I'm in the studio by myself, and I like for these paintings to make me, you know, feel something, and particularly with the clouds that I've been making lately as well. I mean, I think that's kind of... I've always had an interest in, like, weather and, you know, atmosphere, and I think that this is, yeah, seeping into my work too. They used to be, like, these clouds and landscapes started out as a backdrop for my figures, you know, to break up all of the figures. But now I kind of think that they're, you know, standing on their own, these works. Mm. Yeah, but no, light is very, like, it's kind of the basis of my work, yeah.
We're going to turn to you, Marikit. We've spoken a lot to, you know, we're kind of talking about this idea of quiet contemplation and thinking about both of your practices in the studio has been, sounds like, somewhat solitary. And the idea of an inner sanctum, I think, in one way, kind of is a very personal, sacred, private experience. But it also, you know, the idea of an inner sanctum also represents a sacred place of refuge, I think, where we feel safe and we feel connected and loved. And often an inner sanctum is one that's shared with our community, or in your case, your family or our kin, chosen kin, and you often co-create and feature family members in your artworks. I'm curious how the idea of an inner sanctum kind of resonates for you in the process of art making with your family.
That's hard. I think for me is that I know that my work can be most powerful when it's authentic, and my family is very important to me. And I feel that I've made my family make sacrifices on my behalf in order for me to pursue this career, because the career of an artist is not easy. And when you're raising three children as well, it makes it more difficult. But
I feel that I owe it to them to dedicate my practice to them, and that my work needs to be rigorous, and that it needs to create discourse, and that it needs to be representative of our communities for their sacrifice to be made worthwhile. I don't know if that answered your question. I don't know. But that's, for me, that's what drives my practice, and that, like, that's why you will often see my family in my work.
Are you able to, and through working with them in your, you know, both featuring them and working, co-creating the works with them, does that for you create, is there a does it create this kind of space in the studio or in your life that feels like this kind of connected kind of inner sanctum with your family? Is it a way of kind of...
I think, yeah, more recently, yes. That's not how it started.
Right.
I think it started more as a way to introduce visual intrigue to my work because I found that in my technique, you know, oil painting figures or portraits can seem really old school, and I just felt like when I was looking at all of my peers at the time making, you know, what was considered contemporary, I just felt like I was, you know, practicing this antiquated practice of oil figurative painting and that it was quite rigid, and I couldn't like bring myself to paint quickly or and gesturally, or like, you know, today would be a yellow day. No, today's just a painting day, you know. And so I find my work to be interesting when I have those really rigid techniques right up against loose gestural marks, and I couldn't make those marks. So I brought on the person at the time who I knew could make those marks authentically, and at that time it was my eldest, who at the time was my only, and she was 1.5. And it started with that visual intrigue, but now as they've grown and as my practice has evolved and I've become more confident in my work, their inclusion in my work is not only for visual intrigue, it's for, you know, this generational dialogue that I have with them to learn, for them to learn about, you know, their cultural identities and a way for me to express myself in motherhood the way that I want to express myself. So for me, motherhood and my art practice are not, you know, segregated duties. They're symbiotic, they inform each other, each have their own hardships and rewards. But yeah, my collaboration with my children has become a very, very special thing. Like, I know every parent's going to dote on their children, but this is a very, for me, very, very special. And I wonder how it'll evolve as the teenage years quickly approach. But yeah, I hope it continues. And, you know, my practice is very much dedicated to them. It's a legacy that I hope to leave for them. I make them listen to all my talks, and I know that at least 1 out of 3 is paying attention because I do quiz them after. They always sit at the back though, so they avoid my gaze. But yeah,
there's lots of family members in the audience today, I think. And Jose mentions, you know, and when he was writing about your work, how your kind of practice grapples with familial and cultural inheritances, and you've kind of touched on that. And through that lens of, you know, religious and gendered and cultural expectation, and, you know, the exhibition kind of, as I've touched on, explores practices that foster contemplation and really spirituality and cultural practices or ritual is an essential part of our inner experience. Your work in the show references is a Tagalog mythology, but also Christian traditions, Buddhist traditions, Muslim traditions. And I wonder if you can talk about the way that, you know, faith or faiths, you know, plural, have kind of shaped your artistic practice.
I think for me, being Catholic, being raised as a Catholic, comes hand in hand with being raised Filipino. I feel like it's something that's bestowed upon me, and it's something that I'm not always at ease with, but I do still really love certain Catholic practices that bring my family together, and I think it's really just for the familial tradition that I continue these practices. But then I use my work to kind of challenge certain ideas. Like, Catholicism is inherently patriarchal. You know, he with a capital H. Eve was made for Adam. So those are the things in my work that I like to challenge. And in the painting Upstairs, Thy Kingdom Come, I've, you know, reversed the roles of Adam and Eve, and instead Sean plays the role of Adam, but he's being presented to Eve rather than the other way around. I think my work I've found like a potency in my work when I talk about things that don't make sense, and that when there's this kind of third space or like a grey area where when you say them out loud, you contradict yourself within the sentence. But in my work, I have confidence to say all those things that, you know, might be confusing, but it's okay to feel that way. And that's, I guess, ultimately what I want my children to know about their, you know, multiple social, cultural identities, is that it doesn't always make sense, but that's okay.
And there's a real allegorical quality to your paintings and to your work. And imagination and storytelling is critical, I think, to the human experience, and art and culture fits into that or is a part of that. It allows us to kind of conjure alternate realities, new futures, and just imagine and consider different ways of being in the world. So I'm also curious, beyond religion, how, or maybe it's part of it, is how art, you know, how art making through the lens of mythology and folklore or fable or faith helps you to make sense of our humanity or your humanity.
I think, like, similar to what I've said already, is I think that there are certain things about, you know, my ethnic identity or being raised that I'm not comfortable with. I haven't always been proud to be Filipina, but when I look at the mythology and the superstitions, like, I think when I was growing up and really struggling with who I was, like, I was very much like, no, I'm Australian. That's what's written on my passport, and that's that. You know, at the time, I didn't really think about nuance and what it means to really understand yourself. But at that time, I was like, no, I don't want to be Filipino. I'm Australian. I was born here. That's what it says on my passport, and that's it. But, you know, I look like this. My name's Marikit. I can speak Tagalog, but the one thing that did bring me back to my ethnic identity and that I was really interested in was the mythology and the superstitions and all the monsters that we have in the Philippines and the mythology. And, you know, it's only recently that I've started to think about ancestry and where we've come from and what that means. And, you know, how far back do you consider your ancestors? But I've gone all the way back to the ancient Tagalog gods and goddesses. And I've painted myself and my family in those creation roles. And that kind of... then I can feel a bit more at ease about who I am.
We might open up to questions from the audience, see if there's any questions. Otherwise, I can keep asking. I'm not sure if anyone... there's a microphone. Would anyone like to ask any of these three wonderful artists a question? No? Okay, well, put your hand up. Oh.
Thank you. Thanks, Bernadette. I'd like to ask a question to Seth about the colour, because I loved hearing you say that you have a day in the studio where you want to paint yellow and then another day when you might want to paint another colour. And I wondered if you equate colour with some feelings.
100%, yes. I guess I'm a bit of a clumsy painter in that I don't set up a palette in the traditional way. I sort of use colours across many canvases at once, but it's usually just sort of a blue or a green. I'm not rendering anything. I'm just sort of patching the paintings together until they're finished. But I'm all about feelings in paintings. Colour is the most important aspect of that, I think. Yeah. Thanks for the question.
Thank you, everybody. Clara, I've got a question for you. Sometimes, or how often, do you look at one of your paintings which you've just taken made from a photograph that's sort of, in a way, anonymous to you, but it resonates with something's familiar to you? And I'm personally thinking about one of the paintings where you've got a group of people sitting in their swimming costumes in a forest. And I saw the movie the other day, very disturbing movie, Zone of Interest, and I can't get that image there out of my head. If you've seen the movie, you'll know what I'm talking about.
I've seen the trailer. It looks very disturbing.
Yeah, no, well, yeah. Well, it is.
And now that you've said, I'm like, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Well, when you see the movie, you'll recognise that painting.
Anyway.
But, yeah, I mean, quite often I have people come up to me and tell me that, oh, that's my grandmother. You know, I've got a photo of, you know, that looks just like her. And that, you know, obviously it's not their grandmother, but, yeah, I think just with my lack of detail... there is, there's quite a lot of familiar faces in there. Sorry, what was your question?
I just wondered, like, when I went saw all of those paintings yesterday, the one that really leapt out was that particular painting of the group of they looked like family members in their swimming costumes, and they were sitting in the forest.
Yeah.
Right. And last weekend I saw the movie Zone of Interest, and it looked like you had painted. I mean, I know you didn't, but it looked like you'd almost painted a scene from that movie, and I just wondered how often that happens.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think that, if you go... I'm constantly trawling through photographs. Like, it's probably half of my practice is just looking through people's old photos. And, you know, similar photos come up all the time. It's like we've got the same photo albums. And it's a constant that... You know, similarities come up all the time. But no, I didn't have that didn't come from the movie.
I'm sure it didn't.
Is there any other?
I have one, Liz.
Oh. Well, you've got the mic.
I've got the mic. So another question for Clara. Can you talk about your execution? I mean, there's a kind of roughness, as I saw it, to these marks that you make. And why that is and what
achieves. Yeah, I kind of... So I make quite a lot of work. It's all very direct, and I make a lot of work, and then I discard a lot of work, and I like to keep it quite, fresh and not think about it too much and not to be too precious. And I think that's where the life, you know, that's how I put the life back into it, I suppose, and that's, you know... You know, and sometimes they can look, you know, unfinished, but I sit with it for a while and I think, oh no, that is finished. And so, it's a quick process, but I do a lot of work. So, I'm not lazy.
We had someone else had their hand up. There's a few people. Oh, and I'm after you, there's someone behind you.
Okay. Question to Mary Kate. You mentioned the patriarchy of religion how you challenge it, presenting Adam to Eve. That's obviously a progressing. Can we expect in later paintings of yours a dominance of the matriarchy?
It's in all my paintings. Yeah, there are often works... influenced by a lot of the old masters. I don't know if masters is the right word, but the old classical paintings, figurative paintings, where women were, like, historically in art history, were always presented as, you know, objects of desire and were presented for the male gaze. So I've made a few paintings where I have been influenced by certain works, like by Lord Frederick Leighton, where he's presented... I don't know if I say it right, Iphigenia, Simon and Iphigenia, and Iphigenia's been, she's just laying, having a sleep in the woods, and Simon chances upon her and is taken by her beauty. So, for example, I've taken that work and I've brought the female to her feet and she's awake and she gazes right back at the viewer. So a lot of my work does challenge that Western canon of how women have been previously presented, and I'll be developing a new suite of works for a solo exhibition next year where I will be, responding directly to previous works where, like, women of colour in these old works were depicted only as the slave. So I'll be making much more work that will challenge those patriarchal ideas.
Thank you.
Amazing.
To Clara, I first came across your work in the Sydney Contemporary, I think prior to COVID, and I noticed then that your canvases were quite small. right? Then when I saw your work the next time, that sort of grown a little bit. Then I saw you in spring last year in Melbourne, and they've grown a little bit more, slightly bigger. And again now, here in Adelaide, they've grown, you know, exponentially again. So, did you find that difficult to go from painting on a small canvas to something larger, or did it just come naturally?
Yeah, it was a challenge, and I did a residency about 2018 in Paris, and I went to that residency with the idea to figure out how to translate my smaller works to a larger scale, and it's like it was through that residency that I kind of, you know, figured that out, because it's a whole different way of moving your body, and like the size of the painting is relative to this, you know, to your size of your body, and like so it took a little while, but now they just keep on getting bigger, and like I got a new studio a couple of years ago, like a larger studio, and this is like hence the larger paintings. But it was wonderful to have this opportunity from Jose to go to this scale again that I hadn't done before. Yeah.
We've probably got time for one or two more questions. Is there anyone else? We've got two more. We'll take this one at the front and then the back.
Thank you. Looking at your exhibition downstairs, those big paintings, you have chosen to do individual portraits as well. Can you talk about how you chose those particular pieces? What appealed to you about the photos that you did turn into single portraits?
Yeah, the two smaller ones of women, they are from a larger photo itself. So I've kind of honed in on just like one small figure in the photograph. And I do that quite often, that, you know, I just pick one figure and concentrate on that. But I think it, you know, it was good to have those like the smaller portraits in the mix of the large, like all my paintings are, you know, different sizes, and it was like putting a puzzle together with Jose, and that's what stuck and that's what fit, you know.
We'll go to the last question.
Seth, you said you believe in magic. I think part of the appeal of coming to a gallery is the opportunity to believe in magic. So this question is for everyone. When was the last time you believed in magic?
That's a magical question. No, it's specific to pigment on surface, I think, and mixing it around and attempting to do something that nobody's ever done before. that's that sensation of magic for me. Yeah. That's, I mean, I believe in magic, but I mean only so far. Yeah.
Marriket?
I do believe in magic. I still do. And I think as an artist, you have to believe in magic, and it just helps me get through. That's not to say that we didn't put a lot of heart. It wasn't by magic that we're here and that Jose put us here. Thanks. We've worked really hard and we've earned this. But, you know, the public only really gets to see the glamour of an exhibition opening or a public panel or, you know, these triumphal moments. But what's hidden or what isn't often seen are those long hours in the studio by yourself, or the self-doubt, or the disappointments, or the, I don't want to be an artist anymore, like, why do I do this? So I think, you know, I have to believe in magic. That sounds kind of, there's an undertone of dread there, but, but you know, I think I do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like, it's a rare moment in the studio when you actually feel like you've made something worthwhile, you know, like, but when that happens, I think that's magic, and you have that little moment to yourself, and yeah.
That's a very moving question, and I'm spiralling into like an existential, when was the last time I felt magic? But
you mean not right now?
Yeah. and I was going to ask one more question, but I actually think that is such a beautiful note to end on. And I think that this exhibition curated by Jose, congratulations. Congratulations, darling. And to all the artists. It's an incredible, moving show and has helped us, I think, helped me, and I hope all of us connect with the magic that's really inside of us and that's shared between one another as humans walking and moving through this mad world. So congratulations. Thank you to Seth, Clara and Marikit, and thank you, everyone.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you.